Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
John, shall we move on now to perhaps the issue of sustainability, which was the key thing that you wanted to cover, as well as some of the things we've already covered to some degree?
Yeah, we're going broad, but no, it's thanks, Andy. It's something that as Siemens we're really passionate about, but ultimately this is built on, I guess, some key stats that I can probably give you from industry as a whole. So 30% of global emissions come from industry. So I guess as an area, we've probably profited from the first, second, and third industrial revolution and sort of this consumerism that we sometimes see, and also the amount of technology and development that's really happened rapidly over the last sort of 175 years or so. But ultimately that means that 38% of energy consumed worldwide is via industry, and by industry I mean sort of process manufacturing and discrete manufacturing industries. And all of this is occurring whilst only 13% of global waste is actually recycled. So it's a huge dichotomy again, and something that, you know, obviously can't go on forever.
Was that 13%?
13%, yeah, is recycled globally. So there are massive opportunities in areas within all industry sectors around, I guess, what we would call, but the circular economy. What can we do in terms of giving our products, our services, a second life or a third life back in the field? One of the application areas that we've seen in the UK recently is around looking at recycling and vision systems based on robotics for sorting recycled waste. There's some areas that robotics can be used that are actually not necessarily just aligned with maybe the industries that we think of at the moment, but are huge opportunities where these skill sets can be used in different areas as well. So ultimately, you know, if we can optimize our quality, we've got less waste. If we can upskill our employee workforce to focus on other areas and potentially new skill sets that can add more value and more productivity to our workforce, we've generally then got a slightly sustained outcome. And then if we can start to look at our circular economy, whether that's recycling or whether that is also simply looking at the energy usage, maybe within our production facility, there's a huge sustainability angle that we can see from a robotic implementation that would go down the line as well. And we know that, you know, from obviously from Gary, if we're saying that maybe middle management or those maybe detached from the engineering world don't necessarily see the benefits of robots purely on the financial basis, if we're starting to look at some of the net zero commitments that are coming in and the sorts of C-level engagement that we're having to have within organizations, big and small, robots can also be a part of that net zero strategy and story around environmental, social, and governance responsibility too.
Does that help with making a business case, and in what way?
I would say yes, definitely. I don't know if anyone else wants to come in on that one, but I think, and this is probably something that we'll start to see from different industry sectors and government legislation over the next sort of 5-10 years or so. But ultimately, the ability to report on some of this maybe resource efficiency has huge benefits. I think from a business to consumer perspective, so for example, if it's, you know, consumer packaged goods, or, you know, whether you're looking at buying a battery electric vehicle, or whether you're looking at a more sustainable deodorant, for example, there's consumer bias now towards more sustainable industries. And ultimately that starts with the scope 1 and scope 2 emissions that happen inside a manufacturing facility. So all of this can be something that can give a competitive advantage, yes, but also that sustained outcome, that sustainable, conscious manufacturing effort that can occur for manufacturing organizations.
Let's bring in the others. I mean, you mentioned how robotics can make a contribution in things like sorting recycled waste and helping with energy consumption, but perhaps another area is just simply improving the yield of a manufacturing process. How does that? Are there examples where robotics has really contributed in that area? Gary?
Okay, I'll come in here. Particularly with the vision, you're doing real-time QA. So again, with the vision cameras, you can check dimensions, you can check it's the right size. We've done applications that compares barcodes to parts to packing boxes. So again, the customer had an issue with sometimes wrong parts being put in the wrong boxes. Put a robot in, you've got 100% quality checked throughout. So that is as John was saying, that is a tangible benefit. There's no scrap, there's no upset customer, there's no sending the wrong part around the world several times to the customer and getting it back again. It's just all resolved in the factory. We're certainly seeing more applications for the quality because we've got the built-in camera and things like that, is that almost be it checking the number of screws going into an assembly. Afterwards, photo taken, and then that's stored with the job file. So if anybody queries, I got this and there was a part missing, you go, no, there wasn't. We checked it all. So big inroads into AI capability, where we're confirming parts and different orientations, again, just to maximize productivity. One of the biggest issues, even as recent as sort of 3-4 years ago, people were buying a robot thinking it would solve all their automation problems, but they weren't actually looking further up the line of how was the part being presented to the robot. So AI has almost come about in 3D picking to try and resolve people being either lazy or unable to present the workpiece in an organized fashion. So now it's just opened itself up to more applications again. But certainly the vision and just about the data it can record and save back to a job file that's there for all ISO regs and traceability is saving a lot of time.
To what extent do you need to implement a robot to just improve an existing process, or to what extent is it best to sort of go back to first principles and redesign the whole process from scratch? I mean, is there sometimes a case to do one and sometimes a case to do another?
It's for me, it's case by case. There are some customers you go into and say, actually, I'm sorry, but I don't think you're ready for automation yet. You need to look at a bit more before. Otherwise, and I think this happened probably 4 or 5 years ago, I've seen it. There are cobots that are in factories that have got layers of dust on them. People bought them prior to shutdown as an executive toy, thinking this will be a great thing. This will solve all my problems. Going back to the education, either the person who did know how to run it has left, nothing else has been invested in, and the robots just sat there as a dust collector. And I can understand how that can then influence other management decisions to say, look, we did this 4 or 5 years ago and it didn't work. Look, it's stuck over there gathering dust. That's a cultural issue. They need to upskill their workforce and get the robot working, or understand why the robot was asked for in the first place.
And I suppose a corollary of that is you need a multidisciplinary team to look at the whole process from the start, don't you, rather than kind of individuals just looking in a more narrow sense.
Yeah.
And to continually getting the best out of the robot, ideally you want the skill set at the customer. So it becomes far more cost effective. And I think we touched on it with that these people in the business already know the job. There's no good a robot engineer coming in telling them how to do their job. No, they're helping automate it. The people already in the business know what's required, and they're the people most capable of developing the process to be the optimum.
So, Nikesh, you've got more than 200 companies. Now, there must be a huge variation in, company size, company profile. How does that spectrum break down in terms of their willingness, ability, or relevance to the robotics and automation argument?
It's an interesting question, actually, because we are made up of, as you say, multiple sizes of companies. We've got SMEs, large multinationals, and some companies that are quite small as well, below SME level. And it does vary per sector in terms of the adoption of automation and robotics. I mean, coming from the industrial automation perspective, I can happily say that most of the members in the industrial automation market are pro automation and, the products that they are discrete manufacturers of equipment that actually helps many businesses and end users automate their systems. So we are promoting it in a positive way. So I think that's a one part of it. However, when you look at other sectors, I know, for example, there's a large number of SMEs in the laboratory technology sector, and their adoption of technologies such as these are a lot slower that we've seen compared to the industrial automation technologies. Ironically, even the process of building, drives and controls and switch gear and control gear, those processes are a lot more further automated than some of the labs that we see in the laboratory sector. So I think that comes down to what Gary and John were talking about, that knowledge piece about what investing in a robot might actually provide you with. And I think, those knock-on effects such as, Gary mentioned AI, I think the real-time monitoring of, robotic systems is changing the way we do things. You don't have to necessarily go on site to check your robots. You can remotely, you can remotely maintain them, which is actually something that, optimizes, production schedules and all sorts of things like that. So, it's all about streamlining your processes. And I think once these benefits are made apparent, I think that helps, helps that understanding. So, there are big differences between companies' adoption, but I think it comes down to, making sure that, they've got the means. It does, as you said, it is an investment in the first place, but I think, we mentioned before about the government, I think support there for the SMEs could help them get on their way for sure.
Yes, and we'll come back to that a little bit later on. John, is there anything you want to add? I'm going to kind of move on to a pseudo-political element in a minute, but before I do, perhaps we could just get your comments on that, what Gary...
Yeah, I think just on the back of what Gary and Nikesh was saying there, I think another area that we also see a big benefit of an adoption of technology is for robotics is in a simulation environment. As Gary mentioned, the adaptability of robots and cobots is something that maybe isn't always thought of. Potentially that could be the barrier to entry for the likes of labs and these sorts of systems where there's not necessarily the scalability and repeatability of a certain process. It's a bit more experimental. But the ability to simulate is generally something that is in most robot vendors' software suites. And this isn't necessarily just for sort of software and loop testing and commissioning. This can also be brought in with other peripheral processes that are happening. So for example, it could be a conveyor system, or it could be a 3D picking system as well. So the idea to have this software and loop simulation is brilliant, because it ultimately reduces the number of prototypes that are needed, gets you online faster with your application. But also this simulation can sit alongside the development of a process so that you can start to look at these adaptable different processes or challenges that you're looking for your robot to address. It's something that is part of many organizations offering. It's something that we pride ourselves on at Siemens, but the adoption of this really just makes sense for industries and for robots to really get the best out of their assets and sweat them, if you like, for all that they're worth.
Is the biggest potential for robots in mundane applications, or is it in blue sky applications that are developing from scratch? I mean, or is it hard to say?
I think traditionally we've always looked at it, if it's dull, dirty or dangerous, get a robot to do it. And that sort of figures for probably 90% of all the applications. Then the definition of dull then comes into it. What we term as dull, some people find quite exciting. But it's the experimental for robots. Yeah, I'd agree with John. Use some simulation to actually speed some of that up. But robots are there as a tool. That again is that education. It's not just a fixed bit of plant. It's a tool that you can get to do multiple things. So in the development labs, accept that there's a lower take up, but it's certainly got value.
Right. Well, let's pick up now on comment we've got in the chat here. Funnily enough, early this morning, I was looking at some comments about the German economy, which, as we know, is going through a difficult time, mainly due to its energy issues with Russian gas and so on. And it was being said that the age demographics in Germany is going to be a big problem in terms of enabling them to recover from their current sort of slight recession position. But I couldn't help thinking, I think our age demographics is pretty similar in that our birth rate is low, we have large numbers of aging people, and both of these seem to be huge opportunities for robots to fall in and replace a lot of those skill shortage challenges. And the comment is saying, well, in 2022, industrial robot installations climbed by 3% in the UK to 2,534 units, which is less than a tenth of Germany's total sales. So that doesn't seem to paint a very attractive picture from the UK's perspective. And so, you know, what can we do to compete more effectively globally and not get left behind? Yeah, there's a curveball.
Yeah. I think some of this may come back to what I mentioned previously. So around automotive really being the industry that drives a lot of robot adoption. So obviously the German market is huge for automotive. But that said, I don't think that's the only reason. I think that's one of a few factors there. Working at a German organization, it's something that we see the appetite to invest in the industrial sector is something that's maybe a little bit more proud in Germany. And I think we in the UK probably have to make the best of what we have from a government legislation perspective. I think Gary will probably was mentioning around the things like R&D funding for small to medium enterprises. Again, that could be potentially used from a treasury perspective to look at reducing tax around specific challenges in R&D. I think, though, this may also touch on something that Nikesh mentioned. I mean, the UK is exceptionally strong in pharmaceuticals and life sciences. Maybe there's an element here that because we're maybe stronger in the lab rather than the production environment versus our German counterparts, that maybe that's also another reason for the lack of adoption here. But I think really it's to address the skills, to look at a mindset shift and probably really focus on maybe non-financial metrics such as sustainability, such as safety, and, you know, an empowered workforce as well.
Yes, I mean, you mentioned mind shift. I mean, how much of the resistance is really fundamentally a mindset change? How do we force that mindset change? How do we encourage it, maybe?
I think it's really, you're going to need government assistance to support any initiative. So we can go around banging the drum, but actually some of it will come down to hard cash and regulation changes. So I think the mindset change, consistent education at all levels, including talks like this, Andy, is just, but we do need support for innovation. So there needs to be a bit of a safe environment for businesses to be able to look at automation without actually hitting the bottom line too much. So you need to see that it's de-risked. That's where I would say where you're more likely to get a change in mindset.
Mm. Is it still possible to get, I believe it is, to get tax breaks on development work, you know, not just research, but applied development work as well? Something we touched on in a previous talking industry you know, where you can put in applications to get tax relief against the development work that you're doing, not just pure research, but work in factories and so on, which is new materials. Anybody got any experience of that? Because if so, it would be very attractive, wouldn't it? Because it would get a lot more people on the, you know, thinking about adopting robotics as
And I think that's part of the thing, really, is you've got the capital allowances. Potentially, you could go for the R&D tax claims.
Yeah.
In recent years, or this year in particular, they've made it much more difficult to make a claim. So, right. Again, the messages that are being sent out is not to try and innovate.
Mm.
You know, there's, okay, being a little, poking the bear a little bit here, have we just had too much governance at self-interest, did that, it's actually affected the top level of industry, and therefore they're reluctant to actually make the changes for the good of all.
Yeah, and I guess long term as well, which is the, you know, the other side of that, isn't it? It's a very interesting point. Sorry, John, go on.
I think another, you know, from, I guess, working at a global organization, the other side of this outside of Germany that we probably compare ourselves to a lot would be the likes of the Inflation Reduction Act in the US and the adoption of technology there, the sort of exponential curve and take up through, I guess, a more of an onshoring perspective. If that's something that we want to look at in the UK side, the likes of the Inflation Reduction Act could be a good model to work towards with an industrial strategy from our government. I think, as Gary mentioned, we can do all we want here, but we're kind of confined to the frames of funding and potentially government resource. But the likes of the, I guess, aggressive industrial policy with the Inflation Reduction Act is the sort of thing that we're seeing kickstart great adoption of technology. Some of that is robotics. There's an awful lot of that that's not. But this is probably the sort of thing that a more defined industrial strategy could leverage the benefits in the UK.
Yeah, I think, and just to touch on that, I think it's also to do with the longevity of the schemes that they put into place. For example, I think Gary mentioned the capital allowance super deduction that they were offering that ended in March, April this year. Something that they're rolling out the super deduction, allowing you for 130% capital allowance on machinery investment. Now, if they had rolled that out for maybe a 5-year period, we might see a different change. You know, a lot of member companies that we were seeing straight when they were implemented straight after the pandemic, they were trying to sort out supply chain issues or other areas that, you know, recruitment and shortages of staff. So that was their main focus. So they might not have had the time at that point to then invest in the machinery that they might have wanted to. So government schemes that were rolling out perhaps for a longer period of time might then start to benefit these areas. And, you know, it's not always, a short-term strategy. Like John mentioned, the industrial strategy, it might have to be a long-term and short-term list of goals that we'll be able to target.
Talking industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.